Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
When the sky is dark and the moon aglow and the morning star burning from afar enters into view, all that I can say.
Get those birds out of here. Yes, the birds have been removed from the room, my friends, and it's time for story time. This week's story time is called Take a Memo. And the idea for it came the other day when I was throwing out some old work correspondence. And I was reminded of how, in my mid-30s, I discovered my hidden passion. In 1982, when I was first promoted to be a department manager at the Seattle Public Library, I didn't really understand what being a boss was. My first thought was that I was responsible for keeping people in line by bossing them around. After all, I'm now the boss. I soon realized that my job was not to browbeat people into submission. It was rather to find a way for us all to get work done together, and that was best accomplished through the thoughtful use of words. And that was how I discovered the importance of business communication, and that is how I came to realize that one of my favorite things to do was to write a memo. Yes, writing a memo. I found that I totally loved putting a blank piece of paper into my IBM Selectric typewriter and writing the word memorandum in great big capital letters at the top, and then setting about to accomplish some great goal. In every case, it seemed like the beginning of an adventure in communication, a chance to persuade and to influence, and best of all, a chance to record my words for posterity. I had this love-hate relationship with my first typewriter because I was a crap typist, and as a middle manager, I didn't have a secretary. But between whiteout and correction tape, I hacked my way into the world of bureaucratic communication. I still recall the greatest day of my library career when, in 1984, I took possession of a correcting Selectric 2, a wondrous machine with an internal correction feature. From then on, there was no stopping me. I wrote memos to my boss, I wrote memos to my peers and to my staff. I wrote memos of praise and memos of correction. I wrote memos to vendors and to speakers we engaged and to people who left muffin wrappers in the meeting room. God, I was having fun. I learned that an effective memo has several critical components. First, an effective memo needs a compelling subject line. For example, subject: urgent shortage of paper toilet seat covers in the third floor men's restroom. So there's your subject. Then your memo needs a cogent expression of needs like this: without an adequate supply of toilet seat covers, I fear an outbreak of a host of ailments up to and including irritated bottom disease. And then you must finish your memo with a results-producing call to action. Your collaboration in front-end outsourcing, combined with expeditious product delivery, will create a value-added strategy for a transformational revolution in library hygiene. So I learned to write a memo, and it was all good. Then things hit a snag. One day I found myself in the midst of a controversy involving my boss. My boss was misbehaving, and I was witness to that misbehavior. I consulted a friend who was an attorney, and that is when I found out about a new kind of memo. This memo was called a confidential memo to file memo. I learned that there were certain memos that one wrote not for open consumption, but for the purposes of covering one's posterior. These were memos that recorded facts and conversations and observations that could later serve to vindicate you if the bureaucratic infighting became bloody and if you became the target of someone's need for a scapegoat. These confidential memos to file were written up and placed in a secret location. Now, this was scary stuff, but at the same time, it was somewhat thrilling to be involved in a real-life workplace drama where your words and your testimony, if you will, could be the difference between survival and the unemployment line. Little did I expect that this ability to document through confidential memos to file would become one of my most critical skills, because over time, as I rose through the ranks to ever higher and higher levels of incompetency, I found myself embroiled with a number of controversies and engaged with any number of colleagues who would gladly have sold me down the river to save their own skin. So at the slightest hint of skullduggery or underhandedness or hanky-panky, I began to document and even to keep those confidential memos to the file in a secret cabinet at home should they ever be needed to save my hide. One of my bosses even told me, "I gave good memo, if she only knew." A memo of this sort requires a meticulous transcription of events and dialogue. For example, memo to file, subject: incident of May 14th, 1987, 2 to 2:15 p.m. Location: boss's office. Activity: I showed up for my weekly meeting. Boss X was sitting behind her desk. She asked me to close the doors and approach her. I asked if we could please address the shortage of toilet seat covers in the third floor men's restroom. Instead, she stood just a few inches from me and began to make strange chirping noises as her eyes rolled back into her head, etc., etc. Just goes on from there. You get the point. This is an example of a typical confidential memo to file. Now, I don't mean to suggest that my career at Seattle Public Library was just one big soap opera. 100% of my time was spent getting the job done. Sometimes that was hard and sometimes it was easy, just like in any other workplace. And throughout my career, I continued to glory in my on-the-job writing, cranking out memos and reports and performance reviews with increasing skill on an ever-improving set of devices. These days, you can ask a computer to write memos for you, and I suppose a computer could even track toilet seat cover usage and automatically generate a purchase order for a new roll. And the trusty typewriter, like the quill pen and the mimeograph machine, has been consigned to the dustbin of history. And as I write this, I am reminded that I am old and I am exhausted and I wish to sleep now. I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.